Good afternoon. I'm Danny Murphy from Canton, Mississippi. I'm a fourth-generation corn and soybean farmer, and I appreciate you joining us today. We'll start with developments on what's been a top priority for ASA for much too long. It's for the past three press conferences here at Commodity Classic, we've talked about the need for a farm bill. So far, that we haven't been able to get that done. As all of you know, during the January 1st session of Congress, they passed a one-year extension of the 2008 Farm Bill. And while that's certainly better than nothing, it still doesn't provide the certainty that farmers need to make investments, to as they plant crops, to buy equipment, buy land. They don't have that certainty they know that they need to make the investments. That's why ASA will continue to press Congress for a long-term solution, either a comprehensive five-year bill or either a modified multi-year extension of the 2008 Farm Bill. Within the commodity title, we've got to have programs that provide producers with the greatest possible planting flexibility while helping farmers manage risk. The policy of allowing producers to respond to the market signals instead of a prospective payment under the government program has been the cornerstone of the last three farm bills and has allowed us to increase soybean acreage by almost 15 million acres between 1995 and 2010, and we certainly don't want to lose that progress. That said, we realize the stark fiscal challenge that faces this country and accept the constraints that require us to make changes to the current farm program, including reducing or eliminating direct payments. While what we can accept are lopsided program cuts in one program area that aren't mirrored by reductions in other areas. This was at the heart of our opposition about 2 weeks ago from the proposal that was put forth by Senator Reid and Senator Murray. They would have taken cuts exclusively from the direct payments and from military for the payment on sequestration. That's while agriculture has been willing to accept our fair share of cuts, and we realize that that's necessary, we don't think they need to be proportionate, and that wasn't a good example. With an eye towards conservation, we support maintaining and funding programs that encourage effective conservation practices on working lands. CRP should be targeted to the most environmentally sensitive land and to meet water quality goals, and lands that can be returned to production should be. Within the energy title, we're looking for reauthorization and funding of the biodiesel fuel education and bio-based market programs. Although energy programs don't have baseline funding for this year, the benefits they provide have provided great benefits for the relatively low cost and certainly warrant increased funding and continuation. Agriculture research is the foundation of future competitiveness of all U.S. agriculture, and we support reauthorization of the Agriculture and Food Research Initiative to expand competitive research at USDA, as well as reauthorization to maintain research capacity at all of our land-grant universities. If we're going to feed 9 billion people by 2050, we have to have continued research. Finally, on the trade title, we must see that the Foreign Market Development Cooperator Program and the Market Access Program are authorized and funded at $200 million and $34.5 million, respectively. These programs are critical to the work of the U.S. Soybean Export Council to open and expand foreign markets for American soy. As I'm sure most of you know, soybeans are the largest export commodity in the United States, and probably contributed about $20 billion to our trade surplus. That means a lot of jobs and a lot of economic activity here. The MAP and FMD funds help grow those markets and support economic activity here at home, too. Moving forward, we've already had one ASA representative, Angie Steinbarger from Indiana, testify to the Senate Ag Committee on the importance of maintaining crop insurance and a strong safety net for farmers. As both chambers move forward, we'll ensure that soybean farmers continue to have the seat at the table in the interest of crafting a farm bill that works and provides the resources that farmers need to be successful. At this point, I'm going to give the floor to Chairman Wellman, and he'll speak to you on some of the other work we're doing. Steve?
Thanks, Danny. I'm Steve Wellman from Syracuse, Nebraska. And Patrick just mentioned all the records that have been set this year for Commodity Classic, and I think a lot of that is due from hard work from our representatives from corn and soy and wheat and sorghum, but also from the media and the work that you do to help publicize the Commodity Classic. So thank you for all that. I'm going to talk briefly about our work on trade, biotechnology, and sustainability. Many of you heard the President's State of the Union address, and in that address he mentioned a work to be done on a free trade agreement with the European Union. That's something that ASA is particularly excited about. The European Union, 27 member countries, provides a broad and promising market for United States soybeans, but we do have a couple concerns that with that free trade agreement that need to be addressed, that agriculture has to be a part of that free trade agreement. And for us to be part of that, there's some key elements that need to be included. So the first of these barriers is the non-transparent and science-based and non-science-based process in the EU for approving new biotech traits. And the laws that require labeling of food products that contain biotech ingredients. Europe has been characteristically slow to recognize the promise of biotechnology, and they have been extremely slow in getting approvals of new biotech traits and really have caused restraints in the United States for the introduction of those new traits to be used and cultivated here in the U.S. But recently, most notably, there's been critics in Europe that have came out and said, well, maybe we were wrong. Maybe we should reconsider the benefits of biotechnology. And most notably, it was Mark Linus recently made comments that he sees the promise of biotechnology, not only for Europe, but for meeting food security demands for the world. Also, we're confronted with a serious challenge in the form of restrictions with the Renewable Energy Directive that was in place since 2010. And the implementation of RED, the Renewable Energy Directive, subjects our soybeans to inaccurate and outdated sustainability benchmarks and has resulted in significant loss of market share for the United States and Europe. And as supportive as we are of a potential free trade agreement with the EU, these two items need to be addressed in any type of FTA, or it really won't mean a lot for the soybean industry, and it would be a non-starter for us. On the other side of the globe, we continue to advocate for the conclusion of negotiations of the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the inclusion of Japan in those negotiations. Japan represents a significant potential market, not only for soy, but also for pork, chicken, and beef, which use our soy meal as a feed resource. I mentioned the challenges in the EU with regard to biotech and the RED, but those barriers are hardly limited to that region. We face a difficult approval process here in the United States also. Opponents of biotech use lawsuits to force USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service to produce environmental impact statements, and it's a tactic that has ballooned the approval process from what began as an 18-month process to now to more than 40 months today. And even though the APHIS and USDA have tried to make steps to make that more efficient, and I think we're making progress there, but there's still some definite challenges here in the United States to get new traits approved. And we really can't let the opponents of biotech define biotechnology, and we can't let the abundance of misinformation cloud the endless possibilities of new traits. These traits, whether they're herbicide tolerance or high oleic or traits that bring a quality difference to the soybeans, they really do hold the key to a more sustainable production system here in the U.S. and to a higher quality soybean product. It's sustainability is also an area that ASA has been working on recently in the past, and that work has been taken under within ASA, the United Soybean Board, and the United States Soybean Export Council. So our three organizations have worked together and have developed a soy sustainability assurance protocol. It's for the United States. It's an aggregate approach demonstrating the sustainability of soy production in the U.S. And many of our customers have asked for a sustainability certificates and then the proof of sustainability to provide on their products. And we believe that this protocol that has been developed can deliver that. And we're proud to have worked with USB and USEC along to reach this and provide this protocol for U.S. soybean farmers. With that, I will turn it over to our first Vice President, Ray Gasser.
Okay, thank you, Steve. So my name is Ray Gasser. I'm the American Soybean Association First Vice President. My family and I live and farm about 2 hours east of Steve in Corning, Iowa. We grow soybeans, and our rotational crop is corn. So
hey,
had to
gone.
Get that in. Okay. So separating Steve and me is, you know, is the Missouri River, and it's you know, really appropriate that we address ASA's interest in waterways infrastructure. Our inland waterways are vital to the efficient transportation of soybeans and our competitiveness in a global export market. Right now, the uninterrupted flow of barge traffic is threatened by reduced drafts and shrinking channel depths due to the rock formations and shoaling and the potential of catastrophic failure from our outdated systems of locks and dams. And this has our farmers very, very concerned. The Army Corps of Engineers has reported good progress on removing the rock pinnacles and that have choked the traffic on the river from between St. Louis and Cairo, Illinois. But the threat of another blockage is still very present. We continue to support legislation that funds and streamlines the maintenance and construction of waterways infrastructure, including locks and dams, as well as legislation that not only funds maintenance and dredging of our ports and harbors, but protects the fundings already allotted for these projects. Congress needs to enact a Water Resources Development Act that provides funding necessary to address our waterways infrastructure. Additionally, we welcome the President's Fix It First plan to address the nation's ports. However, we encourage him to remember that commodities shipped from these ports need a reliable and well-maintained system of infrastructure to get there, and that includes our inland waterways and our locks and dams. Another large component of the transportation equation is biodiesel, and as many of you know, it's been a significant growth area for the soybean industry. We have a record biodiesel production in 2011 of 1.1 billion gallons, and in 2012, we passed a billion gallons again. We saw at least a temporary victory in the final days of the lame duck session in the last Congress with the extension of the dollar per gallon biodiesel tax incentive. However, the extension is only through the end of 2013, and we will continue to work to extend that beyond this year. We will also continue our opposition to any proposed waiver of the biomass-based biodiesel portion of the renewable fuel standard. Biomass-based diesel and biodiesel can be made from a variety of feedstocks, and the industry has demonstrated its ability to easily meet the volumes required on the RFS each and every year. Biomass-based diesel is also the only domestically and commercially produced fuel that meets the advanced biofuel qualifications under the RFS. One last thing, and this is really a high note for agriculture. The same tax extenders package that contained the biodiesel tax credit also included a permanent fix for the estate tax. This is particularly a big win for farmers because in the absence of a solution, the tax rate would have jumped to 55% and we would have only had $1 million tax exemption. So with the capital-intensive nature of farming, it's a really big win. Instead, the package passed by Congress in January permanently sets the rate at 40% and the exemption at $5 million. And again, this is a really, really big win for agriculture and something that ASA and other commodity groups have been working on for a long, long time. So we're really proud of that.